Inside your bulletin today, I have included an insert with a reproduction of a painting. Pull it out, take a look at it. The painting is by the artist Edward Hicks, and the painting is known as The Peaceable Kingdom. And I'd like to take a few moments now and talk about this artist and his work. Edward Hicks was born in Pennsylvania in 1780 during the Revolutionary War. His family was wealthy, and Edward had been born in his grandfather's mansion in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. But Edward's father was on the wrong side. He was a loyalist to the British, and when the British were defeated, he was left with no money at all. And then Edward's mother died when he was just 18 months old, and his father could not afford to care for him. So Edward was taken in by his mother's friend and raised in that family. And although Edward's family had been Anglican, his new family were part of the Society of Friends, the Quakers. And his new mother brought him up with Quaker beliefs. Now, when Hicks was 13, he took an apprenticeship as a coachmaker, and he learned the craft of painting coaches. And then after 7 years, when he was 20, he set out on his own, getting work as both a house painter and a coach painter. Now, at this point in his life, Edward Hicks was feeling rather lost. He began attending Quaker meetings, as he had with a child. He was searching for something. A meeting is what they call their worship service. Within 3 years, Hicks had joined the Quaker church, and shortly after that, he married a young Quaker woman. And then 9 years after joining the Quakers, he accepted the call to ministry and became a Quaker preacher. And by all accounts, he was extremely popular. Unfortunately, the preacher income didn't cover the needs of his growing family, so on the side, he returned to painting. And instead of painting houses, he specialized as a decorative painter, painting household objects, farm equipment, and tavern signs. And this type of painting was lucrative for Hicks, but it ran counter to the Quaker beliefs on plainness. And Hicks was criticized by some in the church for profiting off what they viewed as ostentatiousness. So, being a good Quaker, he gave up painting and he turned his hand to farming. He wasn't very good at that and didn't last but a couple of years. So then he tried non-decorative painting, which did pay some money, but not nearly as much as he had made with ornamental painting. And now, with a fifth child on the way and nearing financial collapse, a close friend convinced Hicks to return to decorative painting, and he did. Around 1820, when Hicks was 40 years old, he painted his first peaceable kingdom. And over time, he would produce 62 versions of this painting. We call them the Peaceable Kingdom because they portray the imagery that we find in the Old Testament book of Isaiah, which tells of wild animals living at peace with children as well as domesticated animals. The wolf shall live with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. This sermon today is the second in a series of four that I call Advent in Isaiah. And each week, we are looking at different passages from the prophet Isaiah and how these passages can help us prepare for the coming of Christmas. In Isaiah's day, which was the 8th century BC, his world, his nation, was in turmoil. The once great nation of Israel, which had been led by King David, it had split into two kingdoms 200 years earlier. Those two kingdoms were Israel and Judah. And subsequently, the kingdom of Israel had been defeated by the mighty Assyrian Empire. And so as a political entity, Israel no longer existed. And then decades later, the Assyrians were knocking at the doors of Judah now, and the situation looked bleak. In chapter 1, Isaiah identifies the plight of his people as being a result of their sin, as a result of their turning away from God. Isaiah warns that Judah is now facing a grim reality. It is going to burn, and there will be no one there to save them. But then in chapter 2, the tone shifts, and instead of describing what is the current reality of Judah, Isaiah offers this vision. A vision of a different reality, one in which all the people of the world now hunger to know God. And furthermore, God's judgment is viewed as a gift, and through this judgment, all nations have set aside their weapons of war. In today's passage from chapter 11, Isaiah once again offers us a vision. And once again, he presents it as a contrast with reality. But this time, he describes a future reality. Because in the future, he says, Assyria will indeed invade Judah, and it will cause great destruction. But then, God will turn on Assyria and will cut that nation down like the trees of a forest. And there in chapter 10, just before our reading, we see the Lord of hosts will lop the boughs with terrifying power. The tallest trees will be cut down. He will hack down the thickets of the forest with an axe. And Lebanon, we get a shout out here, Lebanon with its majestic trees will fall. And that brings us to our reading for today. Out of this prophecy of death and destruction, Isaiah pivots to a promise of new life. And our reading begins telling us that a shoot shall come out from the stump of Jesse. And although this forest has been felled, new life will emerge from what has been lost. Who is Jesse? Jesse was the father of King David. David was the great king of Israel's past. He was the one loved by God. David's house had fallen. His lineage had been cut down as if it were a tree. But Isaiah offers this vision of the reemergence of David's line like a shoot growing out from the lifeless stump of David's legacy. Isaiah prophesies that this shoot will be a new leader for God's people. And exactly what sort of leader this person will be, it's not stated. He could be a king, could be a prophet, he could be a Messiah even, or something else. But it doesn't matter, because this person will be special. They will be filled with God's Spirit, a spirit of wisdom and understanding. They shall know God. They shall fear God. This person, this leader, will lead fairly, and they will judge impartially. They will be strong. They will be clothed with righteousness and faithfulness. This person will bring a new era to God's people. Their leadership will cause creation to rewrite itself. The old rules of power, of might, will be replaced with justice and compassion and understanding. And in this new reality, the predators and the prey will rest together. The wolf and the lamb, the leopard and the goat, the calf and the lion, and they shall be led by nothing less than just a little child. This is the new reality promised by Isaiah This is the promise of God's kingdom. Under the leadership of the one filled with God's Spirit, all will dwell together in peace. And this leader, this shoot from the root of Jesse, will become a sign. They will be a banner to all the world, calling everyone to God, and God's reign shall be glorious. The season of Advent is a reminder to us that we continually need to prepare ourselves for the coming of God's reign. It's not about just getting ready for Christmas and the birth of a child. It's about internalizing the belief that our God is here with us, that God's kingdom is available to us. We have to make this notion part of who we are and what we do. And so the question for Advent is this: How do we prepare ourselves to live in a new reality of God's peace? How do we accept that such world-changing peace is even possible? Now, I'm not finished with this story of Edward Hicks. As I mentioned, he painted at least 62 versions of his peaceable kingdom. But these weren't just copies of one another, no. Because over time, his paintings evolved. His paintings changed to reflect Hicks' view of the world. For the first 10 years that he made these paintings, Hicks' paintings were indeed truly peaceful. The animals are portrayed as being sweet and mild, even the leopard. The child has his arm gently and lovingly draped around the neck of the lion. And in the background, William Penn, also a Quaker, is there signing a peace treaty with the Lenape Indians. And even around the border of his early paintings, he employed his sign painting skills to letter in words such as this: "The wolf shall with the lambkin dwell in peace. His grim carnivorous nature then shall cease. The leopard with the harmless kid laid down, and not one savage beast be seen to frown. The lion and the calf shall forward move. A little child shall lead them in love. When man is moved and led by sovereign grace to seek that state everlasting peace." But in time, Hicks' paintings change. The animals become increasingly tense, and the child no longer embraces the lion, but holds its mane as if it's preventing it from attacking one of the lesser animals. And also, if Hicks included a tree in the background of his painting, that tree is split and broken. Because for Edward Hicks, all of this is symbolism which represents the increased tension within the Quaker church. There was this growing conflict between the Quakers who lived a simple rural lifestyle and more prosperous Quakers who resided in the city. And Hicks was unsettled by this division that was growing among the friends. As Hicks turned 50, the animals in his peaceable kingdom took on a new ferocity. And we can see in some of them, the lion is actually baring his teeth. And Hicks, we know, begins to doubt if his church will ever reconcile with itself. In one sermon, he explained that each animal in his paintings represent a different aspect of human nature, as if there is indeed something beastly within each of us. And then in his 60s, which would be his final decade, Hicks painted the last entries of the peaceable kingdom. and peace appears to have been abandoned completely, with some of the animals, particularly the leopards, openly fighting. Hicks wrote that he had all but lost hope that the rancor among the friends would ever heal. It's unknown if Edward Hicks ever found true peace in the closing years of his life, but I rather doubt it, and that is sad. It's sad that this man of God, a loved and respected preacher, a talented artist, suffered as his church fell into intra-faith dissension. But that, I believe, is a lesson for us at Advent. The lesson is this, that true peace, it's never easy. Salvation is never easy. Our faith can't be reduced to bumper sticker messages or pious-sounding posts on Facebook. Faith is demanding. It requires our entire being. It requires us to change who we are. Faith isn't just 1 hour on Sunday plus a good deed thrown in during the week for extra credit. Faith is how we live. Jesus said this when he quoted the words of Deuteronomy, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you are away, and when you lie down and when you rise up." Faith should be all-consuming. The season of Advent is just 4 weeks that we have set aside to remind us what we should be doing every day of the year, preparing ourselves for the coming of God's peace. There's also another lesson of Advent that we find in this passage, and that is this: we can't do it ourselves. We can't will the kingdom to come to us. We can't fabricate peace on our own. It requires the hand of the divine. It requires God's help and intervention. It requires someone who is filled with God's Spirit to lead us. As Christians, we believe that the Prince of Peace has come as a little child to change our world. But still, peace seems elusive, doesn't it? Edward Hicks understood this tension between the already and the not yet aspects of God's kingdom. He knew the kingdom was there, but still it remained just outside of our grasp. And that doesn't mean that we are just to sit back and do nothing. That doesn't mean we're to just say, "God, you take care of it." No. The lesson of Advent is that if we want true peace, then we've got to fight for it. Amen.